Well, good evening, and welcome to our Village Board meeting. It's October 25th, just about 7 o'clock. I'll ask the clerk to please take the...
Johnson. Brennan.
Here.
Vasquez. Here. Trustee Ellis.
Here.
Trustee Faulkner.
Here.
Trustee O'Connell.
Here.
President Venducci.
Here. And please ask them to stand to say the...
of the United States of America, the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There's none. Oh. Okay, we do have, I don't have that list, two that wrote in. So have so we do have Kelly Forsythe, Dan Lauber, and then Phyllis Rubin, who is on, it looks like, here in Zoom. So
Jean Barbado and Luann Peters.
Okay, so let's do this over. So we did get public comments from Kelly Forsythe, Jean Barbado, Luann Peterson, and Dan Lauber, and also Phyllis Rubin, but I see Phyllis is... Okay, so with that, we do have Shelley, we do have four that want to talk about 8A. Unless somebody objects, I'll wait until we get to 8A, and then we will public comment, unless there's any one of you four that need to talk now for timing reasons. Hearing none, I'll go ahead and wait for that public comment to happen when we get to 8A. So let's move on to elected official comments and announcements. We'll start with you.
I don't have anything this evening, thank you.
I also don't have any comments this evening.
Katie?
Hi, yeah, I just have a couple things. I wanted to mention that I met with Veronica Avila, who's heading up the community outreach sector for Dominican's Truth and Racial Healing Transformation Group, TRHT. We're setting up the relationships and channels to enhance the communication between the village and its residents and the university and their students, and in particular, the TRHT initiatives. We are keen to increase communication to help students feel welcome in the community where they live and study and work, and to help residents get to know the students and understand the events and features and resources available to them at Dominican. So that's continuing. The second thing I thought I'd mention is that I've been participating in the 2021-2022 Leadership Lab cohort, which is a very exciting cohort this year because it's intentionally much more inclusive rather than just including individuals from Oak Park and River Forest. There's been a heavy emphasis on reaching out to leaders and in our surrounding communities, including Austin, Maywood, Bellwood, Forest Park, et cetera. So that's been a lot of exciting work for me, and I look forward to continuing that.
Thank you. I just want to report the age-friendly advisory committee met on October the 13th. We have completed the survey to go out. We also came up with a random sample of residents to target in various age groups. We originally were looking at 45 to 55, but then it appears that we were doing some research and maybe that wouldn't be true reflective of what the interests of our seniors would be. So we started with the age 55 and above. We also put together a timeline for the mailings, and they're going to be a couple of letters going out, some with the survey. Others are just going to be like postcards to remind people that they received a random sample. And it can be either completed electronically or by hard copy. So we're trying to make the residents who get it. I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully within the board has the results.
Just a couple of things, just to reiterate. I know we talked about this last time we met, but Halloween is on Sunday, so happy Halloween, everybody. Trick-or-treating is from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. in the village, and don't throw your pumpkin into the street. Please do the pumpkin smash on Saturday, November 6th. It is a District 90 initiative working with Lakeshore Recycling. That's a really fun thing to do. And last but not least, the Sustainability Commission is working with the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning to kind of enhance and improve our measurement. And we hope to measurement of, I should say, greenhouse gas emissions and our efforts across the village to reduce those emissions. So we hope in the near future, once we finish those joint meetings, to come in and share with the village board, as well as all of our community, kind of where we stand in year two of our measurement. Thank you. Erica?
Hello, I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, Potawatomi nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. I don't think I have too much to report tonight, except we continue with Ken and Lisa to have bi-weekly meetings with the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Advisory Committee, and making good progress in understanding what people believe and thinking through where we want to focus and our efforts. So good continuing, of course, our relationship with Dominican.
Okay, I don't have much either, so it's been, other than to echo what Lisa just said, happy Halloween, and it is from 3 to 7. And you know, we encourage everyone to be safe, wear masks where required, and you know, just be safe out there. The only other thing I have to report is on the 19th, I headed to Springfield for a Illinois Municipal League orientation for the leadership. As I reported out last time, I'm the first vice president of the Illinois Municipal League, which puts me in the rotation to be the president next year. So the president, the current president, myself, and then the second vice president had an orientation with the executive director, Brad Cole. And we went through basically kind of our top legislative needs and issues. And that's just still being formulated. So once we get that really formulated, I'll certainly share with all of you what those are. And if there's anything that you particularly think the, you know, Illinois Municipal League should be looking at, please let me know as well. So that's it. So it was a great all-day orientation. That's all I have to report. So we'll go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. If I can get a trustee to move item A through E.
Motion to approve consent agenda items A through E.
Any questions regarding any of these consent agenda items? Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to please read the agenda items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda A, Village Board of Trustee meeting minutes, October 11th, 2021. B, Village Board of Trustee executive session meeting minutes, October 11th, 2021. Right of way encroachment waiver, agreement for irrigation system, located at 930 Jackson. B, approval of payment to Klein Thorpe and Jenkins Limited legal services in the amount of $23,551.24. E, village administrator's report. Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Vasquez?
Yes.
Gillis?
Yes.
Faulkner?
Yes.
O'Connell?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
So let's move on. We have no consent items for separate consideration, so we'll move on to recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. We have I have two appointments I'd like to present to the Village Board for your approval regarding the DEI committee members. We've had five resignations since we began the DEI for a variety of reasons, mostly family commitments, which is fully understandable. Our ordinance says we have up to 46, so we have five to fill, and two of these wonderful residents put their application in, and so I believe that, you know, any resident should have an opportunity to serve on a committee, those that have open seats. So I present Mary Jane Oliver and Lisa Petrov as my appointments to the DEI committee. Anybody has any questions? I'd answer them. Hearing none, then I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote on these two. Oh, we need a motion. Darn it. I forget. Yes, I'm sorry. If I can get a motion and a second. Thank
motion
you.
To give advice and consent to the village president's appointment of Mary Jane Oliver and Lisa Petrov to the Diversity and Inclusion Advisory.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Now I'll ask the clerk to take the
vote. Vasquez?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Faulkner?
Yes.
O'Connell?
Yes.
Johnson?
Yes.
Brennan?
Yes.
Thank you. So what I thought, if I can, if you all agree, is to move the review and acceptance of the comprehensive annual finance report up before Lake and Lathrop, because I'm an energy on Lake and Lathrop, and I know we've got on the phone and here that would like to go through the audit with us. So if that's okay, I need a motion to move, or just okay. Okay, so with that, I'd ask Rosie to come on up and talk. Your financial report.
Good evening, everyone. I'm not used to the microphone, so.
Yeah.
I'm going to briefly discuss some of the financial highlights that are included in my memo. And afterward, Kim Marshall is here tonight with BKD to give you a little overview of the other documents that we presented for the annual comprehensive annual financial report. Summary of the general fund revenues is on page one of my memo. Overall, actual revenues exceeded budget revenues by $808,000, or about 5.7%. You recall back in November of 2020, we reviewed the budget and we did a budget amendment based on the COVID-19 pandemic. Our original projections based on IML and other issues really showed us that we were going to show decreases in some key revenues. And based on our projections, it actually exceeded what we budgeted, which is a good thing.
I'm going to ask the folks. Okay, thank you. If we can mute it, otherwise.
Some of the major ones, like sales tax, we expected to decrease, but with people being home, stimulus checks, purchases online, I don't know, we all probably did that a little bit more than we expected. We actually saw our original budget for sales tax was 1.87 million, and we came right in close to the original budget. So based on some of those, that's where you see some, we show our actual revenues higher than the budgeted, but most notably, the net change in the IRMA deposit is over 500,000, showing an increase. And that's mainly due to the investment income experience claims, and all that, all those funds that are go into that are non-spendable according to our policy, but we can use those reserves to pay future deductibles and future premiums if we choose to in our budget, which we have in the past too.
Mm-hmm.
General fund revenue expenditures by department are at the bottom of page 2. Expenditures are lower than the budget amount also, and that this fiscal year and down 1.3% from the prior year. And this is primarily because all of the departments we worked to not spend, you know, non-essential purchases were paused, and all departments worked really hard to not spend unless it was needed during the pandemic. If you also notice, boards and commissions were higher, but that's due to the increase in candidate screenings and working to try to fill vacant positions, and legal services were above budget due to pending litigations and other expenditures there. One other note, the contributions to police and fire pension funds are higher than the prior year. The budget reflects the amount of the 2020 property tax levy, which is from the approved pension fund policy that we use. But the actual expenditures are lower because they include collections from the second installment of the 2019 levy and the first installment of the 2020 levy. So we work in arrears. We budget for the future levy and we collect for the prior levy. So it's a little confusing. If you have any more questions on that, feel free to ask me. So the chart on page 3, moving on, shows total revenues and expenditures for the general fund and the impact on our fund balance. If you notice, fund balance increased just over $1.1 million for the fiscal year. The village's policy, it requires that the unassigned fund balance plus the amount restricted for working cash be at least 25% of subsequent year's expenditures. This amount increased to 33.3% from 31.1% in the prior fiscal year. Like I said before, this is basically due to the reduction of non-essential purchases and departments working really diligently to provide services with the least amount of expenditures. Moving on to water and sewer, just the chart on page 4 of my memo summarizes what the water and sewer fund activity did. A brief little comments, the water and sewer fund net position increased just shy of $1 million, $977,000. The village did experience a 10.1% increase in billed water consumption, and that was due to weather conditions, and also since with the pandemic, everybody working from home, water usage increased tremendously. Rates were increased 1% on June 1st, 2020 to offset the 2.5% increase in the cost of water from the city of Chicago. I encourage you all to read the transmittal letter and the management's discussion of an analysis located at the beginning of the report. PAFR includes a great deal of information, and these documents provide a description of the financial statements and summarize and explain the village's financial activities during the year. I'd like to thank the staff for working diligently to prepare this report, especially Kiki Boyer and Kim Marshall from BKD, all her hard work preparing this report. And now Kim will go over the financial report and the SAS 114 letter.
Thanks, Rosie, and good evening, everyone. So happy to be here this year in person. Just want to say that BKD continues to appreciate the opportunity to work with the village on the audit. And also just want to take a second to thank Rosie and Kiki for all their hard work during the audit process. We do ask a lot of questions, ask to see a lot of documents, so we really appreciate, you know, all of their help and their team's help. So I'm going to start off with just talking about the shorter of the two deliverables that we issue each year. The first one is what we call our post-audit communication letter. This is something we issue every year. It's required under auditing standards. A lot of what you see in this letter is required communication from your auditors to those charged with governance. So it starts out with just discussing some of your audit scope and results. On page 2, it does disclose some of the key estimates that are part of the audit process. This does include depreciation expense for your capital assets. It also includes some of the assumptions that are used in determining some of your pension and other post-employment benefit liabilities. So we review those as part of the audit for reasonableness. In addition, we also disclose in this letter some of the key disclosures to take a look at in the report. The report's pretty large, but we do highlight a couple of different areas, such as your long-term debt footnote, as well as the footnotes that relate to your pension liabilities and OPEB, which is notes 12 and 14. I also want to highlight the area under audit adjustments. This is typically where if we did identify any adjustments that were needed during the audit, they would be listed here. But there are no matters reported. I think this is similar to prior year, but this is a good look at how hard your finance team works. There were no audit adjustments identified. In addition, under other material communications, this is where if we did issue a separate management letter, it would be listed here. But as part of the audit process, similar to the prior year, we didn't identify any internal control deficiencies that we'd assessed to be either a significant deficiency or a material weakness. So once again, this is really great news for the village. And of course, it shows how hard your finance team works and the strength of your internal controls. So now I just want to touch on a few different areas in the larger report. This is your comprehensive annual financial report. It is pretty significant, but if you flip to the financial tab here, I want to highlight that we do issue our independent auditor's report. The second page of this report is our opinion paragraph. This is a clean, unmodified opinion. This is the best that you can get and similar to prior year. And right below that, I do want to highlight that we do have an emphasis of matter paragraph. It is regarding the implementation of a new accounting pronouncement, GAVB statement number 84, fiduciary activities. This didn't significantly impact the report. It's just important to know that this was implemented for fiscal year 21. As part of the audit process, we take a look at some of the fiduciary activities just to make sure that it's being presented appropriately and in line with the new requirements. But again, no significant impact to your report this year. Following that opinion, we do have a second opinion. Last year we had this one as well. It's what we call our government auditing standards opinion. When you spend a certain dollar threshold in Illinois under the Illinois Accountability Transparency Act, they require the village to issue or have an audit performed under government auditing standards. So we perform the report and issue this opinion to disclose if there's any internal control issues over financial reporting or any material non-compliance. So happy to report there were no such issues identified, and this is a clean, unmodified opinion, and that's the best you can get. Following the opinion is the management discussion and analysis. This is something I highlight every year. It's just this report's large, as I mentioned, so if you're going to read anything in significant detail, I would draw your attention to the management discussion and analysis. It does a great job really highlighting activity that's different from the prior year. There's some really good tables that compares the numbers from the current year to the prior year. Following the management discussion analysis, starting on page 24, but drawing your attention to really page 25 and 26, this is your statement of activities. At the bottom, you can see it shows your ending net position for both your governmental activities, your business activities, and the total combined. So So the change in net position is a positive 1.8 million. It's actually positive for both governmental, which was a positive 813,000, business type as a positive increase of 977,000. And your ending net position is positive at 4.6 million. I do want to just highlight under government activities, you can see that the net position is a deficit, but that deficit did go down this year. And if you remember, this really relates to a couple of years back, we implemented a number of GASBs related to your pension obligations. So that deficit really is a result of recording those long-term liabilities. Page 27 is a look at your governmental funds. You can see your general fund as well as your total for all your governmental funds. Ending fund balances was at 17 million. And you can see the general fund is 11.4 million of that. And of the general fund, 5 million of that is unassigned. And then the last page I wanted to highlight was page 29. This is your statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance. This again takes a look at your revenue and expenditures for your governmental funds. You can see the general fund had a net change in fund balance of 1.1 million. Overall, total government funds also had a positive increase of 784,000. And you end up with an ending general fund balance of 11.3 million and an ending total governmental funds fund balance of approximately 17 million. So those were the key areas I wanted to highlight, pretty similar to what Rosie presented earlier, but happy to answer any questions.
Overview, thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Well, it sounds like we're in a good position. It sounds like we are meeting above our standard in almost in every category.
It was a challenging year, obviously, with everything that's going on. Yep. So considering that, the numbers look really well for the village.
Right. So I'm very proud of Lisa and the team and Kiki and Rosie, I thank you so much. I mean, this is that's a big success. Any questions for Lisa or anyone?
No. The way I take it is we have nothing to worry about. Right?
Correct, right? Some of the flags you see is if there was audit adjustments or internal control issues or significant losses. So you can check all the boxes in the right categories for sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. You've highlighted the key ones that we have to keep our eye on, pension and long-term debt.
Right.
I mean, we've always, don't overspend and watch every dollar that goes out. So. Get off. All right, good. Thank you. Doesn't seem like there's any further questions.
Right.
So,
you want a motion?
A second. Oh. I know. Yeah, we'll need a motion. So, is this done with the presentation?
Bob, some.
Well.
Oh, that's one way to get a new laptop.
Sure is. I think you want to take it out of the. Okay. Well, Bob, you still can vote, even though you're underwater. Village isn't underwater.
Good thing.
Bob can be, even not us. Do it like an Italian.
Bob, do you want to move on?
Is there anything water any left in that? All right. Well, he's wiping up the water. We'll go ahead and get a motion and then a second.
I move to accept the village's comprehensive annual financial report for the fiscal year ending on April 30th, 2021.
Okay, again, no questions. Is there any questions for the staff on our comprehensive plan? I mean, it's great. I really do appreciate all your efforts. There is certainly 20 was a very tough year for everybody, but we managed it wonderful and beautiful. So kudos to the staff and especially Rosie and Kiki and Lisa and everybody. All right, so we'll move, we'll, oh, you got to take the vote, right, sorry.
Faulkner.
Yes.
O'Connell.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Brennan.
Yes.
Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and call the those for public comment. I've got four, so I'll ask Shelby Boblick. Are on.
She's here.
Oh, yeah. You're here. Sorry.
Here I am.
Okay. Hi, Shelby.
Hi, Shelby Boblick. Hello, Village Trustees. I address you today relying upon my personal background, having practiced corporate real estate law for almost 30 years, and having served as counsel to well-known Chicago real estate developers. I also live in the Windsor condominium building at 411 to 417 Lathrop Avenue, across from the proposed Lake and Lathrop project. And I serve as the president of that condominium association. I am deeply troubled by this evening's proposed vote on a third amendment to the second amended and restated redevelopment agreement for the Lake and Lathrop project. Approval of this third amendment gives to the developer further extensions of performance deadlines and a waiver of the village's sole meaningful remedy, the so-called clawback clause, in the event the developer fails to perform. In return, the village and its residents receive what? Empty reassurances from the developer that construction financing will now be possible? In other words, the village relinquishes in this third amendment its only meaningful recourse, the clawback clause, in return for nothing. A construction lender willing to lend for this project can and will condition that the village waive its clawback as part of the construction loan closing, not before. I implore the trustees this evening to vote against the proposed third amendment. Your constituents will question and challenge this third amendment as violative of your oath to act in the best interests of the village, its taxpayers, and its residents. Your vote is an acquiescence to the pleas of the developer, with nothing more than your collective fingers crossed that maybe now this developer will finally get the long-awaited construction financing and actually proceed. In granting these short-term extensions and the waiver of the clawback clause, you are giving away all the village's significant rights and remedies. I caution you that your oath of office requires a different vote. Without this third amendment, the developer can still proceed with all the promised actions and secure construction financing. The village can waive the clawback when and if the construction loan closes. Until the village declares a default, the failure to timely perform isn't relevant. Please do not cause the village's residents to question your motivations for enacting such a unilateral third amendment that works against the village's interests. You can postpone enacting the third amendment until the construction loan closes. That action is consistent with your oath as trustee of our village. Thank you.
I'll be John Freeman.
My name is John Friedheim. I also live in the Windsor on Lathrop. And I don't have a finely tuned legal statement, but I thank Shelby for being that prepared. My wife and I moved back into this neighborhood in 2020. I had grown up here. I was born in a house in River Forest. But when I was looking for a place, one of the places I stopped early in that search, an office on Lake Street. And they promised me a unit would be ready for me by Christmas of 2019. How many delays can we tolerate? I mean, literally, I had to walk away because they couldn't come through. The place has been visually unpleasant, and not anything has been done. We've been promised in the May meeting, the first time I sat in and watched one of the meetings, the developer said we will be able to start digging ground June 1st, pour concrete August 1st. It's almost November 1st. None of that's happened. I think to grant any further extension or breaks, so to speak, like releasing the clawback clause, would be disingenuous on the part of this council, this board. And I ask you not to do that. I ask you to respect the citizens who live in this neighborhood, citizens of River Forest, who have been waiting for something to be developed on that property for every 6 years. I ask you not to grant this clawback, reversal, and suspension at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think Phyllis is not here. I don't see Phyllis, so she must be on.
I'm here.
Phyllis?
Yep. I'm going to support the first two speakers. I know I wrote to you all, and then I actually talked to Kathy today, who told me why it was so important to pass this amendment and to strike the clawback clause. And then I went to a social gathering on Zoom in my condo. I'm at 411 Ashland in the Chatterton, which will be right south of the Lake and Lathrop building. I got an earful from residents. First of all, you have to appreciate that there's a history here. There is a long history. So we can't just look at this by itself. There's a long history of delay and delay and delay. And I will tell you that I'm going to tell you what my neighbor said. My building does not trust these developers. Sorry about that. And they're, I'm sure, in there in the building, in the room. And I would say, didn't they have money for digging these 2 feet before now? They were to have started in June, then July, now it's January. Who starts digging in winter? Digging is done in March, then the concrete is poured in the summer. If we think they are going to start digging and pouring concrete this winter, that would be a mistake, because apparently I've been told that buildings that did try to do that are now having trouble because the construction isn't good. Because you don't pour concrete in this winter. So if we think this is going to be built in any timely way, it doesn't sound like it will be, because it's not the weather for it. If you vote yes to this amendment, what Kathy told me is, well, on the 23rd, when the developer gets their bank loan, then it will be out of River Forest hands. Then the bank has the problem. No. If the developer doesn't build this building, it's a River Forest problem, whether the village board is involved or not. And you will be involved because you're going to say yes to this amendment. So if this building doesn't get built, it's on you. Now, I realize you did not hire this builder, this developer. You didn't hire him. This is part of the history. But you are now responsible about whether you're going to put your trust in him to finish this project. And I have to say, I haven't been working on this and following it that long, but in my short time, he hasn't done anything that you haven't made him do. He cut down the weeds when we told him twice. You talked about the snow that he didn't remove, the flaps in the cover that you can't see the lot. He fixed that when you told him to. As far as I can tell, in the recent past, he hasn't done anything that you haven't on his own that you haven't told him to. What does that tell you? And how many times do you have this happen before you see the warning signs? Because you're going to be held responsible, not the bank. You will be held responsible for this. So make this vote very carefully. I've been also told that there are plenty of developers around the country who would love to have this property, and they would probably decide to build something on it that is maybe more important, more appropriate for this particular plot. We're not crazy about the architecture. We wonder if people really going to want to pay that much for something here. That would be wonderful if they do. We haven't seen floor plans. Has anybody seen floor plans? We haven't seen floor plans yet, I don't believe. I know it's been advertised in the paper. So it's like, we don't know, there isn't enough foundation even to the plans, let alone the building. So that's another comment that was made. And someone said, the village should put its foot down. This is the message I got from my neighbors. I am passing it on to you. This is a very important vote because you're going to extend this yet again and take out some teeth that you have to make sure this happens, and you're going to be held responsible. I think that's all I need to say. Okay.
Okay, then our last speaker or public comment is Margie. I think you're in the audience.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Margie Seconder, 531 River Oaks Drive. Tonight you are considering the 10th version of this RDA redevelopment agreement, which goes back 5.5 years to March 23rd of 2016. The village first issued an RFP for the area 11 years ago in 2010. It's been a long journey. Here we are 6 days before construction is to be completed, and the developer again is facing default as he did in 2016. As often before on this project, this board is put into a time squeeze. Information that comes out very close to a deadline in October 2019, you didn't even have a revised agreement to look at in the board packet. It came in later. There's been adequate time to secure financing. Developer lacks credibility. Remediation delays were due to his lack of financing. Trustees Cargi and Hennick stated October 2019 they would not grant another extension. March 11th of 2019, Trustees Corsini, Conti, and President Ducey said they lacked confidence in the developer completing the job. Trustee O'Connell, you said in the spring to wait until the developer is out of compliance. What now? Lisa Shiner stated in your October 21st memo that the remediation is substantially completed. What's left? Obtaining low terms and tenant letters of intent is not meaningful progress. What monies have been paid? In March of 2019, $2 million of TIF money was paid to the developer. What's been paid since? What is owed? There's a bridge loan to complete remediation of $2.175 million. Do we owe money above the $1.3 million for remediation? What other costs have been incurred or paid? The village is also out legal costs, insurance, miscellaneous costs, property taxes, sales and utility taxes. Why haven't we seen updates on this information since March of 2019? Since this is stated as an open book project, a public-private partnership, has the village reviewed the contracts to ensure compliance? The first and second amendments to the second amended and restated RDA from October of 2019 were not recorded against the PINs, the property numbers. The developer is out of compliance with the RDA by not recording them. Two prior revised or amended agreements were recorded 7 months and 15 months late. Who's watching that? Is there a reason that those are not recorded or recorded so late? This appears to be a developer at all costs. Why is he never held accountable? How many millions of taxpayers' dollars have you committed with little work from the developer? How many more will you? I urge you not to amend the RDA to extend the time due to 8 prior extensions and not to remove the village's primary recourse, the clawback provision. At least until the bridge loan is paid and released and the construction loan is executed. Legal remedies that the village attorney alluded to could result in lawsuits, further delays, and more money. It's been long enough already. Thank you.
Thank you, Margie. Okay, that concludes our public comment. So I'm going to ask so we can discuss it, and we're going to have the developer here give a presentation. But I'd like to move and then second the motion, and then we can go to the – so if I can get a motion and a second on Lake and Lathrop, 38.
I'd like to make a motion to approve an ordinance approving the third amendment to the second amendment restated redevelopment agreement for Lake and Lathrop Avenues in the Village of River Forest, Cook County, Illinois, amending development deadlines and approving other matters related thereto.
Second.
Thank you. All right. So we want to have, let's go through the cover letter. Because frankly, I think that's going to address many of the concerns that the residents brought up. And I think once we go through that, I think you'll see a different reason as to why we've chosen this route. So I'm going to start with Lisa and then over to Greg.
Thank you, President Adusi and Village Board of Trustees. You have before you tonight an ordinance authorizing execution of a third amendment to the second amended and restated development redevelopment agreement, and RDA, with the developer regarding the approved mixed-use development at Lake and Lathrop. The third amendment reflects progress on the project, updated timelines, and some modified business terms of the RDA. As noted in my memo to the Village Board of Trustees, since October 2019, the developer has obtained a bridge loan from Old Second National Bank to pay for the completion of the remediation work, substantially completed the remediation work, relocated utilities within the project area, obtained a watershed permit from the MWRD, cleared all issues necessary to obtain a new construction building permit from the village, obtained 55% presale of residential units, as reported to the Village Board of Trustees earlier this month, and negotiated with one commercial tenant, and as of their last update earlier this month, have other tenants in the letter of intent stage. They've also obtained loan terms for the construction of the project. The RDA amendment proposes to adjust the deadline to commence bona fide construction as defined in the amendment to January 23, 2022, and to adjust the deadline to complete construction of the project 18 months after commencement of bona fide construction. In order to meet this timeline, the developer will pay $50,000 towards the cost of a building permit from the village, which is ready to be issued. Once the permit has been issued, the developer will begin site work on the project, which includes the removal of 2 feet of topsoil from most of the site that is unsuitable for construction, and then excavate further down in certain areas to install foundations later. In order to start bona fide construction for this project, the developer must also obtain construction financing, enter into contracts with its general contractor and subcontractors, pay the balance of the permit fee due to the village, and start work on the project's concrete footings. Once bona fide construction begins, as defined in the Third Amendment, the village's ability to claw the property back if the developer defaults goes away, but the village would retain legal remedies to ensure the property is safe and maintained. The clawback expiration is a requirement in order for the developer to secure a construction loan or the capital needed to construct the project. If the village claws the property back before bona fide construction commences, the developer's excavation costs would only be reimbursed by the village for the cost of removing the top 2 feet of soil, because that soil needs to be removed from the site for any future development of the property. It's simply unsuitable to build upon that soil. However, the developer will be responsible for the cost of removing soil below 2 feet for project-specific work related to the concrete footings for the building, and will be providing a form of surety acceptable to the village. Sedgwick's team is here tonight. I see Marty, Mark, and Kyle in the audience. They have some more information, I believe, to share with the Village Board of Trustees. So if it's all right, I'll turn it over to them.
Yeah, if I could just address two matters that were raised in public comment. Mrs. Boblik mentioned that it was wrong for the Village Board to release the clawback as of the execution of this document. As Lisa said, and as the document reflects, the village's clawback does not go away unless five things happen. The developer closes on a construction loan. They have contracts with general contractors and subs for the construction of the project. They've obtained all permits necessary for construction of the project, including the village permit. And they've begun construction on the project in earnest, meaning they've begun the concrete footings on it. And fifth, they have to provide the village written proof of all of these things occurring all before January 23rd. So I just want to make very clear that the village's clawback doesn't go away if this is approved and signed off. Instead, the clawback only goes away if they begin bona fide construction as defined in the document. This is a heavily negotiated document. We made sure to protect the village's clawback so that if the developer doesn't close on the loan, don't get contracts in place, don't get permits, don't begin that physical work, the village still retains the clawback going forward. Second, Ms. Sikander mentioned that the First and Second Amendments weren't recorded on title against the PINs. I can assure you they are. I have recorded copies of them open on my laptop. The Cook County Clerk's Office, it used to be the Recorder's Office, now it's in the Clerk's Office, it has never attributed those documents to those PINs for unknown reasons, but they were recorded shortly after being approved. I just wanted to address those couple items.
All right, so we'll ask the developer to please take the podium and give us a...
Good evening, everyone. My name is Mark McKinney. I'm with Sedgwick Properties. You've seen me a few updates and presentations in the past. I think most of what we were going to present tonight has been presented there, but I'll highlight some things. Again, we call it a removal of the reversionary rights, commonly called here the clawback. But we are very aware of when that will happen, and that will not happen until outlined by Greg. So we're very aware of that and on the same page with that. So we stand by that and understand that very much. But to get the amendment, the RDA amended toward that end is a very important step for the financing the project and for the lender, for the steps that they need to take and move forward. The sales update, we did report 55%. We got a sale just before the last call or last update. And I believe we mentioned we had another one on the way. We did get that contract moving forward. So that's a person who has bought two penthouses and joining them together. So that makes two units in one sale for a total of 14. That brings us closer to 5% on the sale. So we've had some good luck here in the last 30, 60 days to getting some new sales. We're in what's called an attorney review process on that one, but feel pretty confident that that one will go through, and we'll be working with the buyer to make architectural changes on their home. For those recent sales, just want to highlight, again, I think the market is showing a great appreciation for the project by just the reference to the price point that they pay. The two single penthouse units that have been purchased are above $1.4 million, and the combination unit is approaching $2 million. So these are very well-priced pointed homes, very well-amenitized project, and appointed, I should say, well-appointed projects, and we're seeing the market respond to that. So the project has been successful with those sales and those price points. And all of that activity or sales have come out of 10 to 15 leads a month, which we're capturing about 10 or 15% of those, which have translated to the recent sales. So we've definitely seen some good activity as of late, and would anticipate that will continue as we get activity going on site. We will be updating the site signage to reflect the updated percentage, as well as we start construction to remove the remediation underway, or remediation complete, sorry, and be changing that to a construction underway. So we'll be refreshing the site. We have put fences on the Ashland side to just mask any visibility there, and we continue to keep an eye on site. So even further following this meeting, but I believe everything is in planning right now. The showroom is still open. It typically has hours on Monday through Saturday, but if there's any questions related to that, I'm happy to talk to anybody afterwards. On the retail side, I think Lisa did give an update on the retail. We have 2,500 square feet of this cosmetic surgeon space that is very close to the final stages of its lease negotiation. The other three spaces or three tenants that are interested are two restaurants and another medical care user. They are interested in a total of about 6,000 square feet between the two of them. So those are advancing and continue to be positive. I believe Lisa did say everything we were going to speak to. I'm sorry, let me here. So on the financing, we have selected a lender. We have an executed term sheet, which are the next key steps to moving the process forward. And now we're in a 60 to 90 day loan process. So the first part is preparation. The biggest part of that, I think we've mentioned at one of the previous updates, is the appraisal. That will take almost half of that time frame we just outlined, but along with that will come phases one, two environmental reports as required by the lender. We'll be providing them a geotech report, which is the more about the structural quality of the soil. They have to engage with the inspecting architect to be involved with the project, and be reviewing the condo docs, the sales contracts, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the preparation phase of the lending process, and then we'll move into the loan closing phase, which will be, again, about 50% of the process as well, maybe a little less. And that will include the preparation and review of the loan docs and engagement and coordination with the title company, et cetera, et cetera. So, we have a lot to do in that 60 to 90 days, as well as the parallel track with things on site. As Lisa said, we have everything other than the payment done on the building permit. So we'll be processing, if things go well tonight, be processing to make that payment while we're getting prepared for the construction. I believe we've said several times that we need about a 10-day period to get the trade will be working on site, mobilized. GC is ready to go. They keep updating us that they just need to attend, get their crew mobilized and start on that excavation. So during that 10-day period, we'll obtain the permit and be advancing that work. I know it's very important to the village that we have our contractor work closely with the village and the coordination of noise, dirt, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll facilitate making that connection. They're very aware of it, but we'll make sure that they know who to contact. And I believe Jeff will probably be one of the primary people, but we'll get that. We'll facilitate that here as we move forward. And I guess the only thing maybe that, again, which we've spoken to before that maybe hasn't been mentioned is, again, that we're continuing to commit to that 18-month construction timeframe. And, you know, the variables within that were just to highlight it again. I think most of which we've talked about is just like we've talked about the penthouse buyer who's done upgrades, that could be, you know, work that might extend past that 18 months. Retail tenant build out, which tends to happen toward the end part of the construction once the enclosure is in place, could be a piece that extends past. And the other thing we definitely have talked about is the NFR letter, which will be an extension past to that 18-month period. But the building is permitted, which those things that I've just mentioned do not include, would be within.
Okay, so I'm going to open it up to the board and the clerk.
Yes, I have a question for you. So you've heard the residents, so we're putting a lot on the line here. And one thing I was hoping to hear from you was that if you were granted this 90 or so day extension, need it by that 90 day. And what I heard from you is that the lender, you'll have your loan by the 90 days. But are you, I guess the residents want to know, and I personally want to know, what is your true timeline to get this thing accomplished? How can you actually make that date? If it's going to take you 90 days just to secure the loan, what about when does the construction actually start? Or is that in your plan for the 90 days? I didn't hear that part.
So yeah, no, I think as Greg outlined, there will be some activity. We have to commence the construction before that happens. So we'll be doing moving toward the second phase of excavation. This first phase, is, as Lisa said, is taking rid of the non-suitable, non-structural soil away. Then moving to the next stage of construction and starting foundation. So we'll be able to advance that as we're getting to the construction loan and then close the loan and move that forward.
So what date would you say you could, obviously we're talking in approximately, do you think that you could start doing those things?
So if we have a 90-ish day period to get the loan closed, I would say within about 60 days, we should be able to move into that latter fit, into that sort of commencement. 60 days to do the non-suitable soil, and then the 30 days to sort of get the balance of the excavation moving forward.
And then how
How
will concerns about the weather affect that?
Well, you know, we'll have to do, you know, there's various, you know, admixtures, blankets, all sorts of things you can do. You know, sometimes we get winters that are friendly, some not, certain things we can control, but we've built through the winter before.
And just so you know, in the packet, January 23rd is the date that they would be required to close, right?
Or before.
Meanwhile, the time before that would be, I guess it sounds like all the
right.
You know, other work.
All the conditions that
yeah.
will
right.
have to be done by January
23rd. Right.
That's it. Did you have something?
Yeah, I'm confused. There seems to be some lack of clarity in terms of this. Greg very clearly defined. You clearly understand it, yet our residents seem to think there's a disconnect there, and I can explain that to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a matter of conversation like we're having right now. I think it's like what we're doing as a clerk or a trustee or a president. I mean, well, you know, this is the culmination of the conversations that we've had over the last, you know, so many months about the sales and so forth. So I think, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to go over to you guys. I just think it's a matter of this type of conversation and clarity over what a clawback does for that we're not giving it up.
Those five things, which includes the construction.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is very, you know, I don't blame anybody. I think this is, you know, it's typically this is what needs to get clear.
No, I was just going to ask the question, you know, of members of the community. I mean, do you clearly understand exactly where we're at with this? We have not given that up. Do you clearly understand that? Because I don't want
yeah,
to walk out of here and have somebody say, we gave it up. We're not giving it up.
No, and that's why I wanted to acknowledge
yeah.
it.
There's somebody behind the podium. You have a question?
Yeah.
Oh. No, we do not.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. So I'll ask the village attorney to repeat himself because
well,
he.
7575.
you say you're getting the word out there, but we're not getting it. But in 2 hours this morning, I found two from Board of Trustees meeting from up 7 and 7.
I'm going to have to ask you to get to the board because, right. I mean, this all gets recorded and people can't see you and you're sorry. Just somebody talking. I don't mean to interrupt you. I just want to make sure you can come to the podium. And speak and just tell us your name. And, I mean, I don't want to cut you off, but if this is public comment, then I want to get recorded properly.
Yeah. My name is Julie Patterson, 7575 Lake Street, Centennial House. Thank you for this opportunity because due to family circumstances, I haven't been able to keep up as much as I had previously. I've been watching this since 2016. I do not feel that the board has communicated well enough and given enough information. The website, Lisa, thank you, is so vastly improved since I started, but a lot of people, particularly seniors, do not have internet or social media. They don't get the e-news, and I realize that that's a problem. I also, and guilty here, realize people don't read it. They are last-minute Larrys and find out about it, and then all of a sudden, that's this. An exam in 2 hours this afternoon, I was only able to find two references to public comment, one in the Village Board's minutes of October 11th, 2021, from Mark McKinney, and he gave the good news, and the minutes from September 27th, 2021, from Phyllis Rubin. She asked, why has the amendment for the plan development been removed from the website? The other site that I am pretty familiar with is going to the update, which has been terrific. But I found that you have to use the search on the Village website to get to the update on the Lake River Mixed Use Project. For people who don't know this, and I don't know how to get people to know this, it's very difficult for even me who knows how to get there and where to look.
Okay.
So I
appreciate you bringing this to our attention. You know, maybe the solution to that is not only updating, maybe looking at our website, but maybe we'll do a printed newsletter for.
Yes.
Okay.
If people don't get the newsletter.
Print it. So
yes.
We can maybe drop it off at the Centennial. And
that would be it.
Just if you're saying that many do not have, we want to communicate. It's hard to print to the whole community, so that's why.
Yeah, no, I totally understand.
But we will certainly try, especially this project.
Yes.
So John and Lisa, let's, work with our communication group and the developer to make sure that we do a little bit of, more outreach to our community and to the building surrounding that development.
And last comment, if you could put what the village attorney said in writing, I think it would go a long way to
they don't
reassure.
Have that, Bob. Okay.
No, we don't have that.
Is it in?
Yes.
It's in the board packet.
Is it in the board packet?
Yeah. So it is in our board packet.
I didn't. Oh, your board packet.
Yeah.
Not,
so you can go online and.
But
you
it's
could,
published
you know,
on
and it's published.
Our website.
It's published. So what we've done years ago is I made everything transparent and open and public, so you get everything we get at the board table.
I did not see that on the board packet today.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I know where to look for it.
Okay.
Yeah, just go up on our WWE.
I do know where to look for it.
And you didn't see it?
No, I did not. So.
Okay.
Yeah. But to more broadly answer your question, part of the reason why students are skeptical is because over and over again,
I can understand and appreciate the delays. I just wanted to get to that clawback clause.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of communication.
That would be very much appreciated
in writing. Yeah, well, we'll make sure you see that on the website somehow. There's an issue there. And we'll try to come up with something that makes, during the construction time where it helps residents around the construction to
okay,
get a better feel for what's going on for those that don't, like you said, have internet. So we do want to make sure.
You can get something about the clawback to us as soon as possible, I think it would go a long way.
Yeah. We'll send it to you this evening. No worries.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, well, we're done with public comment.
One more.
We're now deliberating amongst ourselves, and I just allowed it. Unless, Shelby, you have something different to say?
I was going to answer the question.
Oh, go ahead.
And that was, I saw the packet. I reviewed the packet. I reviewed Lisa's description, which was totally accurate. What I did not do, but I can do, is read the Third Amendment. And if, in fact, it contains the five conditions that are described,
it does.
We're going to be okay.
Yes, it does.
Right. It's on page 35 of the PDF that's linked in the packet. It's numbers 1 through 4 towards the top of that page. Read it right there.
We'll get it to you.
You find the BART packet, it's on page.
We'll promise you we'll get it to
page
you.
Page 35 of the PDF.
Correct.
BART packet.
Yeah. Thank you.
I still have your email address. I'm just sending it to
you. Yeah. Make sure you get it. And we'll even highlight it. So any questions? I'm sorry. Thank you, John, for that. Any further questions?
Katie, I've got a question for the developer, or actually, I guess it's the developer and for the village. How long have the permits been ready to be pulled, and how much more than $50,000 is due for the permits?
Sure, I'll have to go back and check the timeline. I think August in terms of the permit, but I'll go back and check. The total permit fee, including some out-of-pocket costs that the village incurred, is $220,000.
So
they'll pay. Okay.
All right, Katie.
So what we're doing is what's being proposed is that the developer pays $50,000 now and pays the remainder of $250,000 minus $50,000 in January.
When they close the loan.
Yes.
So I guess I have a question for the developer, and that is, why haven't you picked up these permits and started already for $220,000?
Well, the work under the permit was always contemplated to be part of the construction loan. But at this stage, we also now need the permit for this excavation stage. So we're paying the $50,000 to begin this phase one 2-foot excavation that we've talked about. And then the balance would be for the balance of the permitted building.
So it wasn't paid for and pulled because you were planning on paying for it through financing? Through the construction loan?
The current bridge loan did not have the building permit as part of it. It was the building permit costs were always part of the construction loan. So we're just working through that as part of a transition until we get those proceeds from the loan.
Thanks.
I would just like to clarify if we. You have the ability to loan finance, and then it will take you till about January, end of January, to get that close. You will begin construction by doing the second phase of excavation. Finish.
Clarify that. We will, within 10 days, we will get mobilized for the phase one excavation, which is the 2 feet. That's that 60-day time frame of the 90, and then the latter 30 days of that 90 would be for what you just said, the second phase of excavation and the beginnings of foundations to comply with the five requirements of the RDA.
You mentioned some construction and what that would look like a little bit, and a little bit confused because I wasn't sure if I could hear you correctly. It sounded like two penthouses, you maybe said that was going to take longer than 18 months because that's
buyer customizations you know, we could get a, you know, our very last sale could be, you know, again, we have the sales to get to the construction loan. We may have a sales that'll go on, maybe get a sale every month for the next 12 months. So we may have somebody come in way down the road and say they want to completely renovate their house. So those are things the outside of the permit. We'll have to re-permit those. And those are things that have come outside of the 18 months. Potentially, they may not. It just depends on the sequence of those changes relative to the work that's within the permit drawings. But if somebody comes in and customizes, they want to do brand new cabinets, they want to tear walls down, those are things that are just the outside of our current permit and may therefore be outside of the 18-month window.
So I think you wouldn't be doing your job if you didn't have a guideline or a timeline. February, starting that clock on the 18 months, what your construction would look like generally. Can you explain that to us?
Well, again, that we're looking for that to be not a February start, but a January, you know, the mid-January start. You know, I'm not the construction guy, but I would imagine we would be looking to be. So we probably, I mean, you kind of look at the building as sort of two phases, if you will. We have kind of the parking and retail, which we call the base or the podium, and then we have the, I'll put it in three parts: foundations, which actually does include a very important part with the retention system. And then would be what we call the podium, which would be ground floor to second floor. That gets you to the over the garage, over the retail, and then what we call the residential portion, which would be the second, third, fourth floor, and then the roof, the rooftop. So foundations will probably go on with the, especially because of the detention system, which is pretty substantial. We're going to call that, you know, a few months of work. I don't know that I can pinpoint exactly on that, but that's probably 3 to 4 months worth of work. The superstructure up to the underside of second floor, so that gets you through winter into early spring, and then your what I call the podium is probably another couple, 3 months from there. And then there's the superstructure of second, third, and fourth floor, which would be, you know, probably 3 or so months from there, and then you have all the interior build out that'll come, you know, within that. So, and that'll represent probably the last 4 to 6 months of the build out, the turnover. So, probably close to an 18-month window there.
So, the exterior build out is, you can't do anything with the building. You can't have people going into kinds of commercial or retail on the first floor without.
Yeah, we would, and I probably short-circuited the exterior skin of the building, which would be, you know, happening as we're working up above on the residential floors. We could begin that on the lower floors. In some cases, the exterior skin and the structure are the same thing, so some of that will kind of happen simultaneously. Can the retail, were you saying, can the retail progress while we're working up above?
Yeah, I'm wondering, yeah.
Yes, that's
yeah. No, it certainly can. Just like we would be doing interior build out on the units above, there's no reason why the a retail tenant, if they're ready, couldn't be doing their in what we would call tenant build out while we're doing the interior build out of the units above.
What would hinder this over 18 months?
The unforeseen, I mean, who knows what the unforeseens are? I mean, some crazy drastic winter. Hopefully there's only this front end winter. We won't be dealing with any, we'll be certainly fully enclosed by the next winter and having that behind us. I never would have thought a pandemic would come out of anyone's mouth as a potential risk, but you know, what have we been through in the last 24 months? So, we were still dealing with the realities of COVID, not so much maybe certain degree in the health and safety side of things, but just on the real world side of things is material delays, the supply chain impact in our industry for materials, you know, is, can't say it's not a real thing. Will it have a negative impact on this project? Don't know. It is a reality of the construction world right now.
Is there anything you can do with material delays knowing now that you're going to be going into
Well, no, I mean, I think that we have the excavation phases, which are not material related as far as needing material. So that gives us a good chance to plan ahead and get those two, 3 months of advancement in planning to minimize those to our construction team who knows more of those details.
I'm going to echo a little bit of what Erica said. I think the whole, not the whole, but the need and the want would be, as soon to the 18 months that you're going to see, people living in some unit or a, restaurant actually opening up. I guess that's the, we're all around this table is, want it and anxious for it. So.
Yeah, that'd be good timing from spring of 23, right? I mean, right. Perfect time for being able to move into your new home or, have a new place to go as a local restaurant or medical center or medical care center. So yeah, that is our goal.
Yeah, we seem to be aligned on that, hopefully. Now, Lisa, you might want to, sure. So in developments of this type where you have levels of construction, we saw it at Hines, we saw it at the Sheridan, the Concordia Residence Hall, typically, right, what they do is they finish the exterior shell of the building first and then continue to work on the interior as other pieces come to. So it's not uncommon, particularly in multifamily residential units, where they're going to build out and complete those units that have been sold first. And any units that haven't been sold, they'll essentially, in any commercial spaces that aren't leased, they'll essentially white box them, right? Meaning they're ready to go. They're ready for somebody to come in and install the finished materials as soon as those spaces are either leased or purchased. And so what the village has done is developed a series of checklists in order to ensure that those spaces are safe so that any unit that opens up, everything around it, there's an active sprinkler system, there's HVAC, in order to keep the building safe and structurally sound for anyone who happens to occupy it, even if not all of the interior spaces are complete. So down at Hines, the exterior shell of the building, all of the exterior site improvements were completed within that timeline. And then over time, as units sold, or were ultimately rented out, then they completed those interior spaces. But at that point, it really comes down to inspection more so than permitting. Although, I mean, if you have to move a wall here and there, that's not uncommon. Obviously, there is some flexibility that's needed here as residents look to customize their space, provided it doesn't provide, So they are continue to be inspected from soup to nuts. Until a certificate of occupancy is granted at every unit. And then any time alterations are made, obviously we're back in there with permits. And if a space turns over. For Lisa refers to Hines. That was Hines Lumber site. We never do get rid of our old habits, do we?
I think now
I think the developer townhomes. Yeah, it's Madison townhomes. So
yeah.
They're still selling out there too, if anybody wants a townhome.
I have a question.
Yes, Kate.
The materials for tonight mentioned lowering the height of the building, and I don't remember having seen that before. Is this new information? How much is it being lowered by and why? And where's the height being taken from?
Sure. Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the zoning entitlement was for approximately 80 feet for 30 units. Essentially, the top floor was removed, or story was removed, and the building was lowered one story. So it's been reduced from 30 to 22 units as part of that plan development approval. As the plan development contemplated the potential to do so and allowed us to handle that as, at administrative level as a minor amendment. The main point of plan development is to establish what the zoning is, particularly if site development allowances are granted. So the zoning allowance allowed them to go in excess of what the maximum building height was. If they had exceeded it greater, it would have come back to the village board, but that is not the case. In this case, they lowered the building. So they did not have to come back to the village board of trustees for permission.
That was addressed at a meeting, and that was an administrator had done.
Yeah, that was contemplated
that was
as part of the project approval.
It was brought before this body.
Yeah, because he knew he needed, he didn't want it. He brought it up. Yeah, Eric. Yeah.
Thanks.
We were aware of it.
Yep. Okay. So I guess at this point, I feel the momentum of the room, even though I'm not in the room, is moving toward a vote. And I'm just going to make a statement about how I feel about this vote in front of us and this ordinance and Third Amendment. And
so do you want to wait until we take a vote on this, or do you want to say it now?
No, I want to, I guess, just say it now so I don't say it during my vote. It's been a long history of delays and unfulfilled promises. And we've heard from our residents about the lack of trust. And this has gone through several iterations of the village board. I don't know that there's anyone on the village board now who initially did vote on this. I know Rez was on the board, but I don't think you were voting on these matters at that time. So, you know, one of the residents referenced the great frustration from earlier trustees who were voting, who were dealing with this developer and this project earlier on, and those trustees are no longer on the board. I know I voted in 2019 on this project, and against my better judgment, I voted to go ahead and give them another chance. And I think it's possible that this project can go forward successfully based on what Greg said. But at this point, I can't go with possible. We have in front of us because of the relationship, we have a labyrinthine set of documents that's very hard to decipher and understand at this point. And it takes just before our vote, a real estate attorney who's been practicing for 30 years, you know, has to get further confirmation from our village attorney as to what's in these documents. That's pretty frustrating. So I'm just saying now that it's possible that this is going to be a successful project. I can't vote for it. I hope you prove me wrong if the vote does go forward with it.
All right. Thanks, Katie. So
may I add just a couple of notes?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, look, time, you know, I would just ask people to keep in mind that maybe it's taken a few years for us to get to this point. But keep in mind that we have made some meaningful progress. We've demoed the project. We've been through a recycle program for those materials taken off the site. We've been through a remediation process that has that site essentially clean in the eyes of the IEPA. And we've been through a pandemic. And those are meaningful chunks of time and progress that we feel like we've made during this time. And because a lot of that's had impact on our sales, which we've now rebounded, and there's very strong sales today. So I just want to just put those three or four things out there in context with the concerns.
No, I think, again, I'll just add, I think Lisa summed it up very well. I think our village attorney knows how to protect the village very well, financially and otherwise. So, I think we've done quite a bit. I mean, as I said back in April, we're where we need to be. And that is a clean piece of property that wouldn't have otherwise gotten cleaned and available for development if it wasn't for the TIF and the village at the time back in 2010. So even though we didn't take control of the property until, you know, 2017-18, and we made a lot of progress and we did a lot of things as a village. So I think I'm very pleased with this. Now the next phase of this is to get it constructed. And I think that's what's before us right now. And I want to remind the village board that the January 23rd is the end date. There is no additional amendments to it. That is it. So because we believe that we've gotten to the end of the road with this project, and, you know, it needs to get developed. And I believe that the Sedgwick properties will get it developed in time for us to see a great restaurant and some wonderful new residents in our community. So unless there's other questions or comments, I'm going to ask our clerk to go ahead and take the vote on this. So go ahead. Go ahead.
I can make a comment now or when I vote.
Well, we're going to vote. Okay. And it's up to you.
Okay. Okay, I think.
Are you gonna vote now, or you?
Oh, no.
John's gonna take the vote,
John's
and then you can make,
and then I can make it. Fine, that's perfect. I thought you were asking me to make the comment.
No, okay. I think maybe we'll just go for it.
Order was prefixed.
Yes, and I'm going to be, I'm voting yes for a number of reasons. One is because we have 65% of the units sold, and I think starting over would put us back farther, and I just don't want that. And 90 days is not a long time to wait to a final outcome of it moving forward, or we know full well it won't. We are protected because we will not be giving back the clawback until the construction loan is secured and closed, till the permits are purchased. And they are purchasing a permit ahead of time, it is my understanding, to start some of the required construction, which will require the hiring of getting contracts for construction crews and things like that. So that protects the village, and I am truly looking forward to it being built within the 18-month time period with this new amendment in place. Thank you.
Trustee Bachner.
I understand the residents are frustrated with this. I am frustrated. I voted yes. It is back a year or so ago. There's been progress in sales. I didn't want to get in the way of that and the construction. You have 90 days here. Extremely frustrating. Avenue in Harlem, a building go up. I would hope that you would be able to do this in less than 18 months. The time frame that you gave me was like 11 months. I'm voting yes, but I'm not happy with this.
O'Connell.
This isn't easy. Erica, I totally agree with you. The level of frustration sitting around this table, people who have come before us, residents, it shouldn't be like this. But unfortunately, it is. It's the matter of business and government and business and government coming together and trying to get to a solution. Our job is to protect the residents of River Forest. I have the utmost confidence in the document that Greg Smith has negotiated. I have the utmost confidence that we have given everything that is reasonable within this document for 90 days. And I'm with you. There's no more. And there is absolutely no more. And, you know, the residents will understand when we get to that point in time what it looks like, and we'll have to deal with that when we get to it. But, I'm willing to go 90 days on this, and so I'm voting yes.
Trustee Johnson.
My comments are similar to Trustee Gillis. I do believe that 90 days is not a long time, that finding someone else to start this project anew with a lot more time. I will say that I'm aware that there's negotiated items to proceed, but I would have liked to hear that you've incorporated those items in your timeline over the next 90 days, and that's what I was listening for. Trustee Bachner broke it down a little bit better and asked you specifically what were the dates, but, you know, my concern is that when you don't bring it up or you don't have a timeline in front of you, you're going to have these excuses as to why it didn't happen. And we can't hold you accountable until the end. And so if you know you're going to do construction or do some type of work in 10 days, say it. Residents need to know what's going on. They have a desire to understand this. And I think that
you know, they have a right to know things. And so, you know, you're aware of how people are feeling about it. So, you know, I would hope you would take steps to alleviate that tension. But with that said, my answer is for the next 90 days, and you can mark me down for the no vote on the 24th, is yes. We can proceed.
Trustee Brennan.
Yeah, we've heard no more before, and I can't continue with it. Again, prove me wrong, but I'm voting no tonight.
Steve Vasquez.
I have a couple of comments first. I do, as Trustee Brennan indicated earlier, that I was not able to vote on this. I did have a conflict, but I also, for the record, wanted to remind everyone what that conflict was. The conflict was I was in the law firm that represented both D90 and D200. And because of that, there were TIF funds that were involved. And that had at least provided for the appearance of conflict, and I abstained from those votes for that reason. Now, am I happy to vote today? Yes, I am, because I do want to at least provide my comments regarding this whole project. I do agree with the frustration, although I haven't been here the whole time as some of the residents have been. I totally appreciate your frustrations and the delays and the time that it took to get to this point. However, I do see that the conditions that were set in this third amendment was hopefully will be the last set of sink or swim on this transaction. I am saddened to hear the confusion about the clawback clause, and I can understand why. So I'm hoping that we will get that addressed. So that, because I did see a number of residents saying, don't give it up, don't give it up, the understanding that we were going to give it up, and we weren't, as you can see. And I'm glad at least, if anything, we clarified that today, and thank you for raising those issues. But going on, I do think that we're almost, well, at the end of the marathon race. I mean, we're close to it. We got a couple miles left, and I just feel like this is the time that we just have to see if they can finish the race. I will be voting yes for these 90 days. The marathon will end on January 23rd, because I, too, will express my decision not to renew this after January 23rd. So for this developer, I do caution you to please finish this and get it done. Otherwise, you can probably see from today that you're not going to get an extension. And I know Trustee Brennan is not as hopeful about that, but maybe we can either assure her one of two things. It's going to get done, or we're not going to extend it. So I thank you all for that, and hopefully this will get it done, and let's move forward. So there's a yes.
All right. Okay, so the motion passes by a 5-1 vote. There are a couple takeaways. I want to make sure that we, you know, clarify as, you know, we wrap this discussion up. In terms of, I think we've explained the clawback. We're not giving it up until the construction closes. I mean, that was in the document. And just to clarify what Phyllis said, that's the point that, you know, the bank now is responsible for, you know, the monies that the developer will spend. And that's the place where it ought to go is with the bank. However, we don't lose the right, as Lisa has said, and our village attorney has said often, we do not lose the right. We still continue with our zoning and permitting and our for the safety and health of our residents. And we will continue to do that on behalf of the residents. So that right never goes away. And it's proven that we can manage something like that because we put something very successful up on the Hines property at Madison Street, a very successful development on Harlem and Chicago. And I'm confident that our team here will keep the developer, Sedgwick, feet to the fire on this project. So to that end, I'm also recommending a project plan that we should have. It was part of the plan, original plan development, but of course all those dates are kind of passed. So I'm going to ask the staff to work with you, Sedgwick Properties, to come up with a new plan to, so that, as Ken mentioned and Erica mentioned, so we have a pretty visible plan that we can see where you're at in the construction project. So that would be my request as we wrap this discussion up. So with that, we're confident, I'm confident that you will succeed, but you've heard clearly from the board that if this doesn't get to the point of execution, then we will take another route. So with that, if there's no further questions and comments, that we'll move on to executive session. The appointment.
The motion to adjourn.
Okay.
Just for personnel.
I'll move to enter an executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village.
So we'll just give you a few minutes to. Oh, yeah, we need a vote.
Yes, we should.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.